big news. Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here. Right now, score up to 80% off everything home. These are our best deals of the year. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday sale now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
It's here, the Omaha Steaks Cyber Sale. And there's no better time to score big savings on unforgettable gifts. USDA certified tender steaks, beefy burgers, premium air chilled chicken, and so much more. There's something for everyone on your list. Don't wait. Shop now to save 50% site-wide and an extra 20% off select packages at omahasteaks.com. Plus, get an extra $35 off with code HOLIDAYGIFT at checkout. Hurry, sale ends December 2nd. Terms apply. See site for details.
Hello, come in. Lie down. Relax. Take a deep breath in. And now, breathe out. We'll be your therapists today. You're listening to Triathlon Therapy.
That's too much time. Look at Steve McKenna. Steve, what are you doing, Steve? That's too much time. Advantage Reed.
Welcome back to Triathlon Therapy. This episode, we want to let you know that we've got an Ironman New Zealand, a T100 Gold Coast, and an Ironman 70.3 Geelong dynamic plan kicking off, which means that you'll get to choose from a plan that suits your needs. It's not one-on-one, but it does account for how many hours you have, and there will be variations of the options you can choose. But what's special about it is you still have some support via the RPG membership, where you can ask questions in the appropriate space, you can jump on the open chat to the coaches each week, and we will be at the races to do some pre-race tips and tricks and give you support while you're out there, as well as a bunch of other things. If you're interested, email info@rpgcoaching.com and we will give you more information, and hopefully you can join us for what will be a great build and a lot of fun at the race.
Reed, joining us today, he's been on our radar for a little while. A few people have said, you got to get him on. And this was even before he started getting some solid results. Josh Ferris, thank you for coming on.
Thanks for that, boys. Yeah, pop the podcast cherry today. So, looking forward to it.
Beautiful.
What do you mean, our podcast or a podcast in general?
Podcast in general. I haven't done one yet, so it's the first one. So, thanks for having me, fellas.
Oh, hey, that's pretty. Well, that's rare.
And you know, the best part is that you've started right at the very top of the podcast.
So it can only go downhill for me.
That's exactly right. Mate, before we get into the nuts and bolts of the results recently and just triathlon in general, start us from the start. How'd you get into the sport?
Yeah, so, I mean, I've always been involved in triathlon. You know, my old man has had a pretty, not rich history in the sport, but he's been doing the sport for a while. You know, he's been either a coach or participating himself at a higher age group level for the better part of 25 years. As a kid, was fortunate. I played every sport under the sun, from footy to soccer to Oztag to cricket to anything you can think of. I did it. And I think just a natural progression. I did my first triathlon at Hills Tri Club when I was, would have been 4 or 5, you know, just a little kid running around and riding his little huffy around the bike course and, you know, with his elastic laces in his size 2 shoes. And I guess I was fortunate enough to do a lot of sports, and I just think naturally I found myself in triathlon from the age of about 14. I decided that footy probably wasn't the thing for me. I was playing part of the Nepean League and, you know, like coming up against the likes of Stephen Crichton, a few of the big boys in the NRL now, you know, that I've played against, and I look at the size of them for the same age of me, and it's just an absolute, you know, triathlon was NRL was never going to be my calling. Just kind of fell in love with the sport. I always ran as a kid.
Hey, Josh, sorry, 2 secs. I'll get you to connect on your headphones. Just going in and out a bit. I really misguided you on that one, and then we'll go back to it. And we will definitely not be editing any of this out because we are about as amateur as it comes. I need to put more work on Apo. He gets stressed easily.
Mate, while he's connecting his AirPods, I'm just going to knuckle down on one of those points that you said, Josh. You said your old man was like okay at the sport. Wasn't it like the year that Welshy won in Hawaii, he was second Aussie overall, I'm fairly sure.
So can you've got me now? I can't seem to connect through, sorry.
Yeah, that sounds better.
Is that any better?
Yeah.
Yep.
Maybe it's because you're leaning in.
I think what it is, I think the audio is going through my headphones, like my audio, and I'm going through.
Then we can hear clear out now. Of the,
yeah.
Back to your father's poor history, because he's rich history.
Your father's average triathlon career, where he was the second second Aussie overall in Hawaii, right?
Yeah, so he never raced professionally, but he trained along the lines with Shorto and Bruce Thomas out of Parramatta Park down there. And he spent years just traveling with those boys and doing things over in the US and spent a lot of time in Germany. And he qualified, he told me the other day, he qualified for Kona in 94 at one of the Olympic distance races in the States. And then, yeah, obviously went over to Kona in 94. And I think he didn't go sub nine. It was 9:15, 9:20, I think it was. And I think he was 50th overall. And that was obviously the year that Welchie won, and he was second Aussie at 49th place because I think everyone else in front of him blew up. so that was his claim to fame. And, you know, I think that's probably been what's helped me with my career over the time. He's my coach predominantly. So it's kind of like I know whatever I'm doing, he's kind of put himself through it too. So it makes it a lot easier to relate. Yeah, he was quite a good athlete back in his day. He played cricket for Australian indoor and Sheffield Shield for New South Wales as a wicketkeeper, and then found his way into triathlon somehow as well. So, yeah, that was his amateur career.
It's funny you talk about, you know, mixed sporting upbringing. I was at my son's soccer tryouts for like the rep team in the area, and I was like, this is everything I'm against, because the parents were there, they're pushing. You know, it's just like, and the evidence supports it that like mixed sports upbringing is a better path for most kids that end up elite in one sport. And yeah, I think, I don't know for you, but do you feel like you'd still have the passion if you'd been doing it since, you know, you were 10 years old? Like, obviously you're passionate about it at the moment still, I hope.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, you know, it's one of them things, like I'm not very like, obviously, I'm very passionate of the sport, you know what I mean? It's not a sport that you get a whole lot of reward. Like, it is a very rewarding sport, but, you know, if you wanted to go make millions of bucks, you'd go and play NRL, you'd go and play tennis, you'd go and play soccer, all these sports that we played as kids. And I think the kick I get out of triathlon, the satisfaction out of just, you know, putting yourself to the limit, has kind of come off the back of being exposed to so many different sports and so many different opportunities and never really being pushed into one avenue and deciding for myself. Because I guess it kind of shows that you're doing it for the right reasons then, hey, and, you know, you've only got yourself to rely on it when it gets dark, you know. So it's one of those things that it's not a sport you can be forced into doing. Like, it is really important. That's what I've found, that, you know, you're doing it for the right reasons. I'm doing it because I want to do it, and the satisfaction I get out of after a good race or a bad race, you know, the learning experience you get along the way. I don't know. I think, no, probably not, you know, to answer your question. I don't think I would be as committed if I didn't have all those opportunities as a kid and I just got driven into triathlon. Because also I'm quite stubborn, you know, like if someone tells me something, I'm probably going to do the other thing. But, similar to someone else. Yeah, probably the answer to your question, probably not. Hey.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
When you get the like pre-coaching forms that come through and people answer what they've done, that's one thing that when it says like I've played every sport under the sun, that's a real like, yes, you know, this person hasn't been obsessed with it. And since they were so young, they've kind of gone and done other things and also played team sports where you've relied on others or had to let others ruin your day or whatever. And learn from that. Whereas now the only person who can ruin your day is you.
Yeah.
So Triathlon Australia, you were part of their program for a while. How'd that go for you?
Early days was pretty good. I was fortunate enough to travel with the team to Lausanne in 2019. And that was my first year of being categorized as I think they called it an emerging squad back then. So I went to Lausanne and had a decent day. I was still had another year in the junior category to go. And yeah, like, I mean, the experience was awesome there. And that was the best part of the first year of of my experience with Tri Australia or Oz Triathlon. And I guess COVID hindered a few things. It's just, I don't know, me personally, it was good exposure early to race internationally. Although it probably wasn't my best performances, it was just good exposure. And then as the years went on and I kind of figured out a bit more who I was, I just got to a point and I realized it's probably not where I wanted to go, not the avenue that I wanted to go down with the Oz Tri. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't take my time back there. It was really good, a really good learning experience for me, and got to train with some pretty epic guys, you know, who have caught it on their career, one being Aaron Royal, and spending a bit of time with him. So yeah, it was a good experience, but it's probably something that I will keep in the future, like in the past, essentially. I wouldn't go back down the avenue again.
And that might speak to your stubbornness as well, you know, having to being told what you have to do. You know, I was always the same. I looked at, you know, I couldn't imagine myself having to be told what races I was going to do or where I had to train or what coach I had to work under. It's like, that's never going to fly. Like, I like, if I'm going to be putting myself through 25 hours a week of training, I want to be the boss of everyone.
What you're doing.
That I'm doing. Yeah. Yep.
And I think
races to do and also tell what races not to do, right? If someone told you not to do something, you're like, why? I want to do that one, right?
I think that's part of it too, hey? Like, I hand on heart believe I reckon I got the best team around me. You know what I mean? Like, I work very closely with Brad Beer, one of the best physios in the country. Like, I'm just not willing to give up relationship like that. You know what I mean? Like, I get a lot of help from a lot of other people that have a lot of knowledge in the sport. And it's not by coincidence they're not in the national body, you know. And I'm definitely not knocking anyone in the national body. Like, that's fine. But I just really have big trust in my team and I want to stick to them, you know what I mean? I don't want to be told where I've got to go, who I've got to see as my physio. Kind of be in control of your own destiny, hey?
Yeah, absolutely.
Love to hear it. Talk us through, like, obviously you've said that you've got absolute trust in the setup that you've got. What is the setup? I mean, we know, but for the listeners, what's the deal?
Yeah. So my old man's my coach. So he's my triathlon coach, I guess you'd say. So he looks after me swimming and running and then the overall program. I've got Ryan from 3D Bike Fits prescribing the bike. He also does my fits. Got a pretty handy person in Tim Burks is my as a manager, I guess you could call. And I've got the likes of, you know, Glenn from Corrupt Vision helping me along the side too. And you know, when you get to medical staff, it's, you know, Brad Beer. I got an awesome masseuse just down the road here, Murray Crean, his name is, and he's done X amount of years with Brisbane Lions, Cycling Australia, Water Polo Australia, Surfing Australia. And then also some outside advice from Victor Popov, a well-renowned physio in the world, you know. So I've got some amazing people around me to help me along the way. So, yeah, I've got full trust in them and I think they've got full trust in me too, you know.
I was interested to read through my deep research that Clint sent to me that you're a very low-volume athlete. You know, I think when everyone's watching the Norwegians and what they're doing, and it still blows my mind how it's done. You talked us through, like, what's a typical training week in terms of volume for you? And when did you work out that you respond really well to, I guess, lighter load?
As a kid, my parents grew up with, we had learned to swim school. So I, from the age of 16, well, from young age to the age of 16, I was swimming in a 20-meter pool, and that was all I was doing, just all drill, all technique. And even cycling and running, you know, I never bumped the numbers up. Like, I wouldn't even be able to tell you what I was doing as a kid, running wise or riding wise. It was just kind of whatever I felt like doing, mixing in with school. And then when I decided to take a bit more seriously, say the back end of high school, you know, I would have been only riding 200k a week and swimming 15 and running 30 max, you know, in the gym twice. That was short course, so I was still only a youth and a junior athlete then. So I guess volume wasn't as important. We just seen the quality over quantity and really working on skills, technique, whether that be on the bike, whether that be running, and whether that be swimming. That was pretty much a main focus all the way up to the age of 18. And then as I moved out of Sydney and moved up the coast here, which I've been for 5 years, being in more a full-time environment with athletes around me all the time, the numbers never really bumped up. I might have bumped my running to 50 to 60K just over time, slowly worked my way up, and riding 300 maybe, and swimming very rarely above 20. I just think it's just my whole upbringing has been consistency, you know what I mean? Consistency and technique and quality over the quantity. And since moving short course to middle distance now, the miles have bumped up a touch, but I still wouldn't say they're anything crazy. Like, I think my biggest week this year may have just 26 and a half hours, you know, like, and that would have only been for a 2 week block, but I pumped out two weeks above 25 hours. I just think I haven't had enough time as well over the last 3 years to actually absorb the volume and build through a big volume phase. So it's been more of what can I get done without breaking down? So I've had a bit of a rough run in terms of injuries, especially bone stress injuries, which, you know, is a lot to do with running load and other reasons. But I just think I haven't had the time to actually build a. I've been doing the sport for such a long period of time that it's almost like the miles, the big mileage stuff, is almost been done because it's been done so consistently from such a young age. And I've had a good foundation there. I definitely think there's definitely room to do big mileage weeks, you know, and that's definitely something we look to do down the future, and we are beginning to do. I think I'm a massive believer in just, you know, quality over quantity.
The structure of your swimming butt, Josh, like, and for those people who don't know, like, you've been front pack or led, like, you led your long out, you know, over a lot of very, very fast people. Very short and often, is that how you go about it, with a lot of technique work, right?
Yeah, so probably per session we're doing anywhere between 4 to 4.5K a session, and I'll do that 5 days a week. And then a Saturday I'll be doing an easy swim, and that can be anywhere between 1.5 to 2.5, and that's just super, super easy. We do some swim blocks up at the infamous JR squad in Noosa. So usually once or twice a year we'll head up there for a week, and, you know, you'll get your 30 to 35K out a week swimming there, you know, and that kind of feels like that's the top up I need just to build that aerobic base. We don't ever really swim much over 4.5K. Hey, it's just 4 to 4.5K every day, Monday to Friday. I can't remember the last week that I haven't done, say, below 20K. I would say I've hit out nearly every week this year has been above 20K, besides maybe race weeks. You know, 20K is nowhere near a lot. You know, there's plenty of swimmers I watch on YouTube or athletes I watch on YouTube that are doing 27K a week, you know, and they're doing crazy bike miles and crazy run miles. But for whatever reason, that just seems to work. Just the, you know, the consistency over big mileage, essentially, you know. Interesting. Which I find really works well for me, hey?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's something that Reedy and I follow a lot with, like, the way we program for a lot of people, but it also goes back to what you said about the being in the Oz Tri setup, is like, what works for someone else might work for them but not for you, so you need to work out what works well for you and then double down on it, right?
I also think swimming is I think I heard Jamie Riddle maybe say this, it's like dancing, you know what I mean? Like, so much of it is just the feel for the water and how you move yourself through the water. It is such a flow sport. Like, if you've got your hand in the water and you're doing 500 meters and the person hasn't touched the water for 4 days, I still think you're better at getting in the water through 500 meters and keep the feel of it than missing swimming for 3 or 4 days, you know? Because it is so much on feel. That's what I've found. And just getting into a good rhythm and your rhythm, not fighting the next person. It's what's best for you in the water. I think that's probably the way I look at it, hey.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I think, and also just your background swimming, like, I had to do the 30K weeks I couldn't do 30K swim week and then do big bike and big run, which is what always blows my mind. If I was doing a 30K swim week, the the bike might be 200 for the week, you know, and the run would be 40 or 30. And I think for human athletes, like not superheroes like Norwegians, I think it's that's something they need to keep in mind. You can focus on one sport, but don't be scared to pull back the other two to develop that. And I the feel for the water is so important. For me, in an off season, I could let my bike and run completely go, but there was not a day that I wouldn't get in the water and swim at least 300 meters because I just feel the one or two off seasons where I did stop swimming, it would take me months to get the feel back for the water, you know? So I just couldn't let it go. I didn't care if the fitness went, I just had to keep that, that feel.
Well, I think that's kind of the rule of thumb. Hey, I've heard it's however much time you have off swimming, double it. That's how long it takes for you to get back to the fitness you had, you know? So you have 2 weeks out of the water. It's taken you a month, you know, and then that turns in, that's a 6 week period of, you know, really trying to get yourself back to where you even were, probably just a baseline, you know? Very similar. I'll never have any more than probably 5 days out of the water through a break. Just because it does. It just takes too long to get that feel for the water and those swimming muscles back engaged again, you know?
Sure. When we spoke on the phone previously, Josh, you said something that really resonated with me, and it can be applied to a couple of people that I know as well, that you had some stress, bone stress injuries, but the first thing you said about it was that at the time it was a really stressful time in your life outside of swim, bike and run.
Yeah.
Can you talk about one, the injuries you had and how they kind of came about, and then how, what you've done to come from there?
Yeah. So I guess essentially when I moved north from Sydney up to here, 4.5 years ago, I obviously went into a full-time training program, but then I also moved out of home, had a lot of stuff going on at home for the reason why I left. And you know, started paying rent, started working full time, started doing all this stuff, trying to train full time. And about 12 months actually into it, 10 months probably it would have been, I came down with the bone stress in my navicular, which is a pretty bad one, essentially, from what I've been told and from the medical advice I was given. And I firmly think it was a mixture of everything, you know, like obviously a lot of stress at the time from outside reasons, you know, outside of swim, ride and run. I was working full time at Kingy Pub, you know what I mean? On my feet till 3 a.m. on a Sunday. And I'm not the only athlete that does that, you know what I mean? And it probably goes back to the same old question we were saying before. It's what works for something, someone doesn't work for the other person. And for whatever reason, my body just couldn't handle it. You know, I had a bit going on there and came down with the navicular bone stress injury, and that set me back a good 9 months at least. Like that was 6 months essentially non-weight bearing nearly. And it was just turning every stone two times over to find out what happened, you know, and we never really could put our finger down on one, but I have a firm belief it was because of probably outside stresses that I wasn't dealing with properly at the time. And then I guess off the back of that, just such a long time deloading and being in a boot and being on crutches, it, like to this day, you take a photo of my two calves next to each other and my right one's significantly like less muscle mass than the left one. And I think just off the back of that, I had, well, what was it? I think it was it would have been 4 in my right tibia stress reactions, grade 4 stress reactions. And then most recently back in January, I found a bilateral stress reaction in right and left. And I just think that was off the back of being deloaded for so long, and previous to that navicular, the stresses around that. And yes, you know, components of probably not fueling properly and working too much and not doing proper recovery, not getting proper sleep, is all a factor, you know, multifactorial bone stress injury, I would call the first one. And yeah, just kind of snowballed from there. And I wasn't able to really get a clean run until this is the first time I've done 12 weeks of one run session a week in nearly 4 years, you know? I don't even think I'm doing the bare minimum run wise at the moment, but I'm still able to get it done somehow, which is good. You know, it's better than what I've been doing before. So it's a start, and it's a platform to build on for hopefully seasons to come. Hey.
Josh, I'm really sorry. I've got to go jump off for a meeting, but Clint will steer the ship from here.
Too easy, mate.
Actually, look forward to listening back to it because I'm already I already think, yeah, it's an interesting, you've got some interesting takes on things, and it's going to be, you're already getting results, but if you stay injury free, it's going to be exciting to see how good you get and how many races you can really stamp your authority on. So thanks for coming on. Apologies, Reed, for having to jump off.
Can you mute your mic and just leave it going, Reed, and we'll keep on chatting. Sure.
It won't actually matter, but yeah, I will do that.
Well, we don't want to hear you chatting on the phone about. Thanks, mate. On that, Josh, like, obviously, like, in those scenarios, you know, when you have adversity, you always learn more than when just things are smooth sailing, right? And I guess that's probably when you met Brad, or I might be guessing, but like, what are the things from that real tough period that now are like just staples in the way that you do things?
Yeah. So, I mean, as of recently, I've really been getting into red light therapy. So I've, lucky enough, few sponsorships have essentially got me a red light therapy light pad thing. And, you know, that's something I do daily, you know, just to stimulate blood flow to the area, especially to those, to both my shins, post run, you know, just as simple things as making sure I am fueling. You know, when I was, you know, 19, 20, it was pretty easy to overlook that thing. And now, after having a string of bone stress injuries, eating has become such an important factor. Weekly massages, you know, I always used to be fortnightly. Weekly massages, just to loosen anything that may be pulling on anything. Regular checkups with my physio, regular checkups with Brad. Like, I see him, probably seen him more than I've seen my mum over the last 4 years. You know what I mean? Like, I see him all the time, once a week, if not fortnightly. Just the little things. There's so many things that you could rattle off, and I wouldn't say I've honed down on one particular thing that I've made a staple. It's just been multiple things, you know, like this bone stress injury. It's never just one thing that is the reason you get it. It's multifactorial.
As you said too, it's like, yeah, you don't know what it was, but if you just combine all those little one percenters, then one of them's likely going to be,
should stick.
Yeah, hopefully. It's going to stick. And if you don't actually work out what it is, what's the harm in doing the rest of the work to make sure that you're the best you can be, right?
Yeah.
Are you doing a lot of strength work, or is it just like, yeah, talk to me about that in terms of how you structure the strength work.
I do. I'm in the gym twice a week, and I'm only in the gym for no longer than 30 minutes, you know what I mean, at a time. Yep. I've got a few upper body exercises I do, but because I swim so regularly, it kind of, not saying that it cancels it out, but, you know, I'm in the water 6 days a week, you know, and I feel like just mobility, especially upper body, is a big strength of mine. Just being able to get in the gym and do some mobility, lengthen out, you know, yes, work some muscles that probably don't get worked as much in the pool. But lots lower leg, lots calf, lots feet, lots of hamstrings, glutes. I just find that I need to, you know, I need to build that muscle mass, especially back on the right calf. A lot of plyometrics, just for that elasticity of the muscle. So I'm doing probably 3 rounds of plyometrics a week, and then every alternative day I'm in the gym. And so it can take me anywhere between 5 to 10 minutes to just do some quick exercises, just to make sure I'm getting the blood flow to those areas, and working the things that need to be worked. And then, you know, you go into the gym and do your 30 minutes in gym, a few heavier calf stuff and some mobility. So it's most good to days hear. I'm doing some That's, kind of exercise.
Yeah. And it's just good to hear that, like, it doesn't have to be like, you don't have to go in there and try and lift the stack, right? It's like, it's going in there. Not that you could, or I could, or I mean, it's like, you go in there, you activate muscles that you aren't normally using, or if you favor other muscles, then you're activating the ones that you should be using. And it just means that, you know, you're firing in the right order when you go out and train. But also, something you just said then, and one of the other gun swimmers of triathlon said when he came on, Josh Amberger, was range of motion.
Yeah.
Swimming, like, you mightn't be in there trying to do specific weights for swimming, but to keep the range of motion as open as possible is a key to being able to swim really well, right?
100%. You know, it's just that elasticity through the water, you know, like, you've got two centimeter more reach than the next person. That's 2 more centimeters worth of water you're able to pull than the next person, you know, and in the water, that's enough to make a significant difference over the course of, you know, 1.9 or 3.8, even over 750 if you're racing short course.
Yeah.
I think injury free in the water and spending as much time around and keeping the feel of the water is so important, hey?
For sure, for sure. Now, back to your racing, like in terms of if you're an outsider looking in, it looked like a steady progression from like, oh, you just got better and better and better with your racing and you got higher up the podium until what, you won in the Philippines. But breaking that down a little bit with Ryan, like you were doing very, very little running, but turned up to races, like knowing the fact that, say, Geelong led out of the water, rode front pack. But Ryan tells me that you were like two runs before race day, literally. Yeah. So like, how did you go about turning up to a race mentally knowing that like you weren't going to be even close to what you're capable of with running? How did you go about attacking those races on race day knowing that you were going to just turn up, swim, bike, and then do the best you could?
Yeah. So, I mean, Geelong was a tough one. Like about 8 weeks prior, I come down with the bilateral bone stress injuries in the shins and or in my tibias. And I was so over because I was going to race Cebu the year before, 70.3, and that was going to be my first 70.3 race. And I was so over just getting 8 weeks out from a race, something happens, I either get sick, I fall off my bike, a ligament injury somewhere or whatever. And I was so over that and I just really wanted to race. So I was like, fuck it, I'm doing it. You know, like, don't care if I come out of it with two stress fractures in my shins or two snap shins or I'm coming out of it sweet, like, I'm racing it. And so I kind of just went into it mentally a bit like this could be my last one. So took the pressure off because, you know, if I come out of that race with injuries, there was a very good chance I was done with the sport. I just had gone around in a vortex for so long, you know, and it was just wearing thin. So I kind of went into with the mindset of just like, this could be it, you know, I either come out of it healthy or I come out of it broken. Fortunately, I come out of it healthy. So I went into that race with, I think I did one run on the Monday before the race, which was Sunday. I did a 20-minuter. Yeah. And then I did a 40-minute run on the Friday, 2 days before. And I remember waking up Saturday morning and my quads were shot. Like, I remember waking up and my quads were just completely just like locked up just from that 40-minute run. And I was pretty nervous going into that. But I was also pretty set on being that, you know, I'm not going to be at the pointy end at the end of the run. Hopefully, swim, bike, I'll be there. I knew I was moving pretty well in those two disciplines. And yeah, come out of that race and it wasn't just gave in on me. It was my feet. I just had so many fucking blisters that
that's what I was going to ask. I mean,
end of the run, yeah. And could not put my feet on the ground. It was like I was stepping on shards of glass, you know. Yeah.
And then from that race, obviously the week after you probably were in pieces, but what you had, I think it was 5 weeks maybe. Was that right?
Till the next week? So then into, it was Port Mac. I think we had just under 6 weeks into Port. And
yeah,
I was fortunate enough. I took a week off running after Geelong and I nearly did my essentially return to run to lead into Port Macquarie. So it started out as 2 30-minute runs in the first week.
Mate, I got the numbers. Runs. I got the numbers sent. Ryan told me yesterday, and I think you maxed out at 45K in a week for 1 week.
Yeah.
Like, insane to then go to Port. You were fifth. It was a time trial, right? Like, where you're not getting to do your strength really, and that's the swim. So you're just like, all right, it's a bike run, and you still ended up fifth. So another really good step in the right direction.
Yeah, it was good because, you know, I improved there. Like, I think my halftime there was 1:15:30, something like that. And it was actually funny. I was chatting to Josh in Malaysia because he ran past me at about 15K into the run and I was gone. Like, quads were shot to pieces. And he goes, mate, you're still in this. And I thought I was well out of it because of the staggering start. It was just like a bit of shambles. And yeah, lucky enough to finish. I think it might've been sixth that day, or fifth or sixth. I actually can't remember. And, yeah, finished that one feeling okay again, not broken quite yet, you know, and it just was lucky.
Shins were intact. So then it was onto the Philippines then?
And then it was, I had a bit of a break then, and then onto the Philippines. I think it was 9 weeks post. And that was my first time I got two run sessions out. I did two by 3K runs 2 weeks in a row. I got to do that. And that was the first time I was able to do consistently running above 35 to 40 to 45. Like, I never peaked out over 45K. And so I got two run sessions in before Cebu, which was, mate, I was cheering. Like, I was like, I'm going around there to run a 116 in the heat. And obviously that didn't happen.
I've got to stop you. 116 in the heat there would be absolutely world-class. But you ended up as a 119, right?
It was just over 120. I think got me for the fastest run by 20 seconds, I think it was.
Just to add some context to that, like, I think Henry Schoeman won it the year before. Like, he was like 2 or 3 minutes slower than that.
Yeah. Fastest run time ever run there. And yeah, Mike got so first you were, than the year before, 2 years before someone else had one. It was like a couple of seconds faster than me.
So yet again, you've made another step up. You know, it looks like a steady progression, and it is, but like, from where you were, this is just insane. And then next one was Sunny Coast
and second there. And
we're at a 111.
End up running. It was sub 112. The result sheets got me in at a 120, 112.30, but they didn't get me T2 time correct, so I'm taking some time off that.
We'll take a 111, mate. That's that is like you're getting to that level there where it's like, okay, we're right on.
Honestly, you know, that was the first time I finished a run not absolutely shot to pieces, and obviously running quite a decent time there, and you know, having a phenomenal athlete like Jake out in front. It was the first time mentally I could see myself going that. I've always said I know I'm a sub 70 runner. And it was the first time I could see myself potentially going to do that down the track.
Yeah.
So that was an awesome confidence boost. Although I didn't get first place there and the win there, I got a lot out of Sunny Coast just off the back of my swim, and then predominantly riding the bike, you know what I mean? And being the one, I would say, leading the pack, and still having to come off and with a pretty decent run with some shape in the run legs was good.
Was there a point after that race where you thought, you know what, maybe I should go to 70.3 worlds, or is it a bit like, let's keep that on ice and then next year go there and light it up?
For Marbella. So
second, so was there only one spot there?
So Cebu was the very first race that you could have qualified for Nice this year. So that was the first week of the new qualification process, and obviously I missed out at Geelong and Port Macquarie.
Yep. Yep.
So I qualified for Nice in the very first race of the season that you could have done. So I'm lucky to get that out of the way.
Okay.
I would have loved to go on Marbella. I think that bike course would suit me, and obviously the swimming being a strength course. But Nice next year.
Well, I mean, the answer then was I'm not going to Marbella, but I'm just going to go to Malaysia and suffer in paradise. Yeah. Talk us through that one.
Oh man, I think I'm still getting over it. Like, that was brutal. I hit
it's insane, right?
I came to the run and we hit back around the airport. For those who have done that course, it's I can't even explain it. Like,
I years ago went to do that race, and I knew at the time that Belinda Granger had won it a few times. So I messaged her and said, I said, like, what can you tell me about Malaysia? And she said, oh, it's way hotter than Kona. And I remember reading it just going like, oh, it's way hotter than Kona. Like, and got there and was like, oh my Lord, this is way hotter than Kona. And
brutal.
Like, it's the year absolutely that.
Brutal. And I don't feel like the aid stations were set up for the heat. Like, it was just.
Mate, well, you guys would be like, and it happens at a lot of races, right? In the pro field, you're the very first one through.
Yeah.
And so, like, a lot of the time they're still setting things up. And then, you know, as the age groupers come through half an hour later, they get treated to a smorgasbord.
That's right.
Like, early in the day, and they're like, oh, here he comes. And they're not ready for you. So, you probably suffered more than most.
I think it was in race brief, and I popped my hand up and asked the question. I was like, is there going to be ice out on course? Because I've done a couple of races before where you're not ready for us when we come through. And they're like, yes, no, there'll be ice out on course. And the only aid station that had ice was the first aid station when we've come out of a 16-degree exhibition center with the aircon blaring, and there's a kid there holding ice in his hands. And I'm like, I'm not even going to be able to get it. It's going to melt by the time I put it in the tri-suit.
Just open your tri-suit and say, just pour it in, mate. So, pour it in.
But no, that was an awesome race. You know, we worked really well in the water together, myself and Trent Thorpe, another weapon swimmer. And then I just, wasn't the plan to go as early on the bike, and mate, I just kind of went.
For those people who don't know, you like, and you didn't come up on the tracker, but I was tracking it, and you can't, like, it said that you didn't start, and I was like, oh, okay, well, you must be sick, you know, it's Asia, whatever, and
yeah,
didn't hassle Ryan like I normally do on race day or whatever, but yeah, then get to T2 and you're 6 minutes 40 or 7 minutes up on yeah, the two guys you got out of the water with, so you obviously got stuck in on that bike, mate.
Yeah, I just kind of, I don't know, I just popped on and kind of just got to the, I got myself sorted the first K and just was like, I'm just going to go to the front, you know, just go to the front, see what we can do and put pressure on the boys behind, but still riding my own race without burning matches. And
yeah,
I looked under my shoulder at about 10, 11K into the ride and there was just no one in sight. And I was like, go, like, just keep going, you know, don't burn me, don't burn any matches. But I think looking at it, I may have rode a little too hard, but
I was going to say, like, in a race like that, were you focused on heart rate or power, or how did you gauge your effort being?
I was the first 20 minutes, I was all power. So I was just focused on power,
yeah,
and staying below my absolute max range that I would be in,
yeah,
and just making sure it was controlled and not worrying about the heart rate. And then I got to about 20 minutes into the bike and then I was like, settle the heart rate now. And just slowly, like, I always kept an eye on the heart rate, just made sure it was never popping up there. But predominantly power the first 20 minutes with a bit of an eye over heart rate. But after that, it was just all heart rate. I just, you know, just made sure that the heart rate stayed stable. I wasn't spiking it up the steep climbs. Like, it was 1,000 meters elevation essentially out there. You know, I think I got 950
very
elevation, you know.
Very deceptive.
So, it's quite easily just I pump that heart rate up, you know what I mean, especially over those couple of those bigger climbs at the back end of the ride. And I knew I had it in me. I didn't know the gap, obviously.
So did they tell you the
boys behind? And
as you got off the run onto the run, did you get any splits where it's like, hey, it's 7 minutes?
So because I didn't have the time, my timing chip, I ran into T2 and they've given me a timing chip and I've asked them, I'm like, how far is the gap? And they're like, we don't know. But there's a little out and back section about 2 minutes. And I knew my last timing split was 1:30 at about 13, 14K,
yeah,
or 20K actually. And then I knew it had gone out above 1:30 because that 2 minute out and back section, I hadn't seen anyone. So I knew the gap was around, had to be above 3 to 4 minutes.
Yeah.
And yeah, I got into T2 and I asked, like, where are they? And they're like, we don't know. And then I didn't get my first timing split from the first day, 17K on the bike, 20K on the bike, until about 4K into the run. And I heard it come through the radio of the lead push bike guy riding next to me saying second male has hit the first aid station, which was 3 kilometers ago, or 2.5K ago. So I've got my first timing split there. And I was like, okay, if I don't capitulate, I should have this, you know. And
but at a race like that, like when you're surviving on the run, regardless of whether it's 30 seconds or 7 minutes, you're still just the whole time panicked, right? Like you're like, oh, they're going to catch me.
Yeah. That's the thing about being on the front. Like you're just running scared the whole time. For me, I just never feel like I have it until I'm in the finish shoot, you know? And I think it was, I hit 15K on the run and I was like, I don't think I'm going to make this. Like I think I'm going to have to stop and walk an aid station just to cool myself back down. Cause I was getting to a point where it was getting really bad and I was like really not panicking, but I could not maintain what I was doing. And my heart rate was just coming down slowly for the same pace. Like the body was just giving in a little bit. And yeah, thankfully I seen the 40 kilometer run marker for the Ironman. I'm like, well, I've only got 2 more K to go, a bit over. And I'm like, I can do that. And the gap was still at about 5 minutes then. So I just completely engines off then and kind of tried to just survive the last 2K, you know. And
well, a few of the guys who said like they were there last year to do the Ironman and this year for the 70.3, I'm like, they said, oh, it's only half the distance. But yeah, but you're revving way higher. And in those conditions, that is just gross. So
yeah, you know,
it's one of those races that you'll go and do and then you'll turn up to another race and someone will say, oh, it's hot. And you'll just go in your head. It's like,
this is nice.
Hot. Yeah, this is hot, but it's nothing like
perfect race temperature.
Yeah. Obviously a very easy week this week. What's the plan like for say the rest of the season and then let's go 2026. What are we doing?
So I've had I did my first swim today. I had 3 days out of the water. Me and Josh went for a swim on Sunday. Then we had a bit of a nightmare with travel getting back from Langkawi and only arrived in late Tuesday. So same again, just chilled yesterday. Actually went to work, worked on the roof with my brother all day yesterday, and got my first day to relax today. So I just a little cruise soon this morning, and then I'll just slowly wean myself back into a ride on Saturday and start my week from there, essentially into next week. And I build up for two more weeks, and I'll go race Laguna Phuket Triathlon. And then that'll call me for the year. That'll be season done. Bit of time off, Chrissy, New Year. It's always such a busy time of year anyway. It's nice to just not have to worry about swim, ride, and run, and you can focus your eggs into other things, you know.
So you get what? Dad's a floor layer, brother's a roofer. So when you're not swim, biking, and running, who do you get stuck working with more, mate? Which one of them's going to be calling on you for the last rush to Christmas?
Yeah, usually I always try to get on the roof. I hate getting on my hands and knees and laying floor. It's terrible. You're stuck inside and you're bent over the whole day. It's awful, you know. So I like to try and be out in the sun and on a roof as much as I can. I think Dad's already locked me in for a day next week, I think. So unless that happens, it's very rarely I can get out of that. But yeah, I usually spend a lot of time on the roof. In the easy weeks, I'm on a roof.
So your downtime from racing, you're laying floor on a roof, which is considerably harder than swim, bike, and run. So then,
it's definitely harder than swim, bike, and run, mate. I'm out there, I'm just like, I can't keep doing this, you know, 10 hours, 8 hours, however long it is.
That's a great motivation to go and suffer in Malaysia, mate, when you're thinking, I can do this, or I've got to be on a roof the rest of my life.
Well, I think that's why I was so nervous going into Geelong, because I'm like, fuck, I'm not ready for a full-time job yet, you know what I mean? And my only option is like vinyl laying or roofing, so I'm like, this better pay off.
Mate, the way things are going, I think you've got a fair few years of not, and the team you've got around you too, where they're helping you manage you as a human. I think you've got a fair few years of not having to worry about laying floors or being on a roof. What are we doing? Where's the racing going next year?
I'm not sure. I would like to get onto the T100 circuit. I think that's a great platform for us athletes. My ranking is just not there at the moment. I'm not doing
the races. All it'll take is one wild card. Honestly, like if you look at Kyle Smith.
Yeah.
Got a wild card and put on one of the best performances ever.
Yeah.
It's
that foot in the door, you know, and I think that's the thing I'm realizing now. So I've left Oz Tri to determine my own career, but I think to a degree you always do come under someone else, and unfortunately they can make the calls for you, and you've just got to sit there and hope with your hands up. But, you know, if I can keep performing and keep racing consistently and training consistently, staying healthy and injury free, I think it's only a matter of time. Well, I hope it's only a matter of time. But I mean, for the early part of the season, I'm not 100% sure yet. I could start early in January and look to do some races January, February, or whether we hold out for Geelong, which would be a good start. And then I will nominate for Singapore for T100. Nice. So
you've got hopefully
an option. And then, Nice is the whole year will be revolved around Nice. So that's kind of, we'll go have a chat with Burks and the old man and keep everyone in the loop with what 2026 will look like. And I haven't got an exact idea yet, but I've got a pretty good idea. But it'll pretty much everything will be working backwards from Nice.
And then, I mean, I'm getting way into the future and pending the body holding up and everything. Is Ironman where you'll end up? Like, obviously dad was doing Ironman and you've been around that. So is that where you want to end up?
Yeah, 100%. You know, it's kind of the reason I got into sport was Kona. Like, I think I was speaking on the phone the other day and I was that kid home from school playing tech decks on the floor and watching a DVD from Kona in 1989. You know what I mean? Dave Scott and Mark Allen running down the Queen K, and you know, it's just, that's the reason I got in the sport. That's why I do it. It's that image of Kona running down the Queen K, and it's just engraved in my brain, you know, and I think that's where I will end up, will be the longer course racing. But I think there's still a lot of opportunities to be explored at middle distance for me yet.
Absolutely.
But I'll put a time frame on it, you know, and it'll happen when it happens. If it happens in 6, 12, 18 months, 2 years, it happens then, you know, and just see where
especially when, like, you're doing it like it's your job, right? And the amount of races that you can do in 70.3 is a lot more than going in and doing, say, two Ironmans well a year. So it makes logical sense when you're still doing very well to stay in 70.3 for as long as you can. But as we said, you've got a pretty good team around you that can help you make those decisions. But the funny one, next question I had written down, just a hypothetical, win Kona or Olympic gold? What and why?
Oh, mate, Kona. It's for a lot of people, it's a 50-50 call, I feel, or maybe it's a 90-10 call for an Olympic gold, you know, and I definitely wouldn't pass up the opportunity to go to an Olympics or an Olympic gold, but I think if you told me Kona was on this day and you're a favourite going into there, or you've got the Olympics on the same day and you're a favourite going there, you can only choose one, I'd choose Kona. It's the reason I got into sport, you know. I don't have memory of Sydney 2000. I was born in 2001. I didn't get to witness that part of the
good God, I feel old, you know, now, mate.
So I grew up watching, you know, Reedy Burks and all these athletes, Crowley, Macca winning over in Kona and Rinnie, you know, like that was my era of watching triathlon. It wasn't the short course as impressive as they were, you know, it was the long course. So I'd say that would be my answer, would be a Kona late would be what I'd get.
Hopefully it can come to fruition down the track. And then, the only other one, you just signed with Giant.
Yep.
How good? Is there anything else in the pipeline or are you other sponsors you want to plug before we wrap it up for the day?
So just Giant, yeah. So that's been amazing, you know, and I've been lucky enough to team up with KDEX and Ride Sync just with filling me out with equipment. The bike's ridiculous. Like what I've got now between the frame, the front end, wheels, it's just ridiculous. You know, I was running borrowed equipment, you know what I mean? I had 2017 rim brake Trinity and borrowing wheels and borrowing helmets and just got myself a brand new Sync 2.0 front end. And yeah, now it's the whole kit and caboodle, top of the line, like top of the range, you know, it's ridiculous. And I've got some amazing other sponsors, you know, being Plasmade, Early Beach Dry. I've got heaps of guys in my corner who have been able to support me, especially over the last year, and plenty more that, you know, have supported me for the years prior. So yeah, mate, it's exciting.
No wetsuit sponsor yet?
What's that?
No wetsuit sponsor yet?
Nothing locked down yet.
Okay, good.
Nothing locked down.
No, I was going to say that.
Just as of yet. Probably mate, pretty soon, hopefully. Hopefully pretty soon. It'll look familiar on because I don't think I'll have to change company that I want to wear at the moment, but
nice.
Yeah, hopefully we lock it down pretty soon.
Well, hopefully there's a few paying attention, mate, because if they actually knew the story and you know, how the struggles and the lack of consistency, not on your part, but just from injuries and stuff to get you to this point, imagine what's going to happen in the next 6 months when you can stay consistent.
You know, mate, I think it applies to everyone. Everyone has their own adversity, setbacks and hurdles they need to get over, but I just kept telling myself everything will come full circle. And thankfully it's seeming to do so right now. So yeah,
love it.
You know, everyone's got their own issues and they'll work through it the way they work through it. Hey,
well, keep doing what you're doing and keep working with the guys you're working with, because I think you're onto something really good there. I
appreciate it, Clint.
Mate, thanks for coming on.
Awesome. Thanks for having me. We've done it.
Cheers.
Thanks, mate.
All right, mate. I'll end it there and we'll chat soon.
Nah, beauty. Thank you. Cheers. Dead, mate.